So yeah, so I'll be talking about two joint works, one of them with my collaborator Fred Pichelza and Yang Zhang at the top on physical applications of scattering amplitudes, and then a second paper with my collaborators at Max Planck in Leipzig, where we're looking into applications to Delpezzo geometry, combinatorics, complex, real, and complex problems. So these will be two works, and sort of illustrated, the sort of objects we'll see will be illustrated in the pictures around there. And we're going to focus now on the guy in the bottom left, the main part, the first part. Oh, okay, so various computations at the same amplitude. So the idea is that the amplitude given at the bottom here, it is constructed from, represented in the moduli space here, shown here, the moduli space N05.
So here we have a depiction of several ways to compute the same amplitude, shown here. Is the partially ordered amplitude for the subset of the Feynman diagrams for the cubic scalar theory. Okay, so here we have an illustration of the propagators, which you see here. They're associated to the edges in the diagram. So S12 is associated to the red edge, S23 to the green edge, and S123 and S234 associated to the boundary, the gray circles, where opposite edges of the gray circles are identified. Okay, so we construct a rational function from the pairwise intersections of the propagators. From the pairwise intersections of the lines, the strata in the moduli space. On the other hand, on the left-hand side, this is the real algebraic geometry perspective. On the left-hand side, we have a new way to construct it due to a paper which we call the global Schwinger parameterization. We'll see later. The association there is that we have a piecewise linear function on the plane, or in general in a higher dimensional space. And on each region where this piecewise linear function is itself linear, we have associated to it in a very explicit way exactly one Feynman diagram, exactly one contribution from one Feynman diagram. So you'll see here exactly that S12, S123 is associated to the region between two of the red edges, to the red arrows. And the red arrows themselves are the propagators. So this gives you an explicit construction of the amplitude at the bottom, and the framework for the mathematics, the structure behind this is called tropical geometry. On the left, that's the framework is called tropical geometry. So here we have real and complex geometry of the moduli space M05, tropical geometry on the left-hand side and on the bottom. Represented the Feynman diagram expansion.
It's a 5-point amplitude?
It's a 5-point amplitude, yes.
Let me decode. Should I understand these pictures, or it's just motivation?
It's
the right picture, I'm trying to read the formula and look at the right picture. And
yes, so for the right...
Well, I see some terms, but there are some terms that I won't see.
Yes, exactly. So we're looking at one of the triangles in there. The top left, I think my thing's out of battery. Oh, no. Okay. We're looking at... There's no back button. The back button doesn't... Anyway. Okay, so we're looking at this triangle there. So all of the vertices on that triangle. So we see S1, 2, 3, 4, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, and 2, 3, 4. And there's one vertex each. For each vertex, we get exactly one of those guys. Yes?
Can you explain how this diagram relates to the real geometry of M05?
Yeah, so this is, so
Yeah, I was missing last time.
I'll try to find it.
Oh.
So we're gonna Canadian style hockey.
Okay. So this is M05 over the real numbers. And we have to blow up 2 points. It decomposes into these four factorial over two equals 12 different maximal connected components.
Yes, and each one is an isosahedron.
Each one is in a curvy isosahedron, exactly.
How do I see the components and the faces here?
There is one connected, for each connected component, we have some permutation, some relabeling of this guy at the bottom. And this guy at the bottom is literally that triangle right there, that pentagon right there. Excellent, thank you very much.
And the amplitude is that result, or it's a sum over triangle, the various?
So this, yes, this guy, this contribution is a partial amplitude corresponding to one particular color order. The full amplitude will be a cyclic sum, will be a sum over all color orders of this guy, each with some weight. So, in fact, we sum this guy over the 12 different isosahedra in this thing, and that result will be the amplitude. Okay, so now some complex geometry. In particular, I want to talk about the framework introduced by Freddy Cachazzo and Song He and Ellis Yuan in 2013. So the input data is a set of kinematic invariants, which satisfy the usual momentum conservation relations. And what you have is a set of equations, a set of n equations on the space of n points, in say, or 6 points on the Riemann sphere. So these are the scattering equations. They're defined in M0n, and as you saw before, the combinatorial data here is represented by the isosahedron in the real moduli space. So here, this is the scattering equations, the scattering potential, and then one always chooses that set of represents the moduli space of n points on the Riemann sphere with a 2 by n matrix, so that we see that it can be identified with Grassmannian modulo column scaling. Good? Okay. So I will denote by x of 2n. It's a different, slightly, to connect with the Grassmannian, I'll denote. We can also say that M0n is the torus quotient x2n of the Grassmannian g2n of two-dimensional subspaces of a complex n-dimensional space. Okay, so here's where the fun begins. Okay, there's a Grassmannian duality between the set of k-dimensional subspaces in an n-dimensional space and the n minus k-dimensional subspaces in an n-dimensional space. We just saw that the CHY formalism is defined on x2n, g2n modulo torus. That means that our Grassmannian duality induces on gn minus 2 comma n a dual kind of amplitude. Okay, so it says that if we represent this by a triangle, we have on the left-hand side, the upper index 2 corresponds to the dimension of the subspace, and the lower index corresponds to the number of particles. We have a representation of cubic scalar amplitudes on the extreme diagonals. And so the question is, if you choose, you can choose points and choose a projective chart in each. I've illustrated here. And you get the parameterizations. And the question I ask you is, we're given a duality on the left-hand side. What happens in the interior? So what is the analog of the scattering equations of the CHY formalism when we go not only on the boundaries of this triangle, but on the interior? Can we define some analog of the amplitude, the five terms in the Mandelson invariance? Can we define some analog of that on these other moduli spaces, x, kn? So here's the overview. So the configuration space of points in the projective line, that comes from that uses the CHY formula. We move from that, motivated by this notion of duality, Grassmannian duality. We'll say, let's consider by Cacciazzo, myself, Guevara, and Misera, we extended the CHY formula to from the Riemann sphere, CP1, to moduli spaces of points in higher dimensional projective space. And then with together just last year, we generalized this one step further to construct to the full moduli space. So in this construction, the original construction, we extended it to something called a positive configuration space. Positive configuration space means that we're looking at configurations of points that are sort of in convex position. Okay, let's see. In the second part, the story, there's a connection to Del Pezzo moduli spaces, or moduli spaces of Del Pezzo surfaces. With Freddy, we established that connection, and with Geiger, Panizut, Sturmfels, and Yun, we explored this in detail and proved various results about it. So what is it? If we extend G3n consists of points that satisfy a non-collinearity condition. So we take six points in the projective plane. They're generic exactly if no three are contained in a line. To get the and that's these spaces xkn, x3n, and in this story we're also saying that no six points can be on a conic. So that's the additional condition, and so this gives us a notion of a sort of much refined notion of of the kind of amplitude that we saw in the first picture. Okay, so in the first picture, we had this tiling of the plane with 12 associahedra. Well, it turns out that we'll get similar tilings for any of the spaces like X36. We'll get tilings into analogs of associahedra, a nice notion of scattering amplitudes, one for each connected component. And similarly, when you throw out this, when you include this co-conic condition, you get something even that's somehow a little bit even better behaved. Has a an action of one of the exceptional Dinkin groups E6. Okay, so yeah, let me continue. So in this, so I'm going to talk about one particular the amplitudes for one particular quantum field theory, the so-called bi-adjoint scalar. Lagrangian is given here. So it's has Lie algebra is un cross un tilde, and the amplitude decomposes into a sum of partial amplitudes where the coefficient of each is a product of two traces. Okay, and the coefficient of that product of two traces, each trace gives you a color order, and this is a these are the coefficients in that expansion. Okay, so in the bi-adjoint theory, this theory has a singularity at p squared equals 0, where p is the sum of any subset of momentum vectors. has a simple singularity there. And for each one of these, we get one. The residues of this theory are encoded by a rather very richly structured polytope in combinatorics, the isosahedron. The face lattice of the isosahedron in particular. Amplitudes for other theories have sort of other kinds of singularities where you can have some of the propagators can appear in numerators and So ultimately we're going to talk about the bijoint theory where the Feynman diagrams are constructed from these curvy isosahedra in the moduli space. Yes. We specialize to planar diagrams at first, and then to construct the full amplitude, we take a weighted sum over all color orderings, all pairs of color orderings.
So this is squared up to zero statement is true for all diagrams, not just planar.
Yes. So if you fix a planar order, then the p squared equals zero, the sum must be a consecutive subset. In that particular order, and then you sum over all of them, and then you go to any subset.
And these three levels?
Yes, three level. Okay, so here's the generalization from the moduli space of 12 pentagons to higher dimensions, not only higher dimensions, but points not just on the projective line, but points in projective k minus 1 space. Okay, so what kind of new behaviors could we expect from amplitudes constructed from these new moduli spaces? Well, some things we recognize and some things we don't. In particular, what are the poles of the amplitudes, amplitude-like functions which we construct? Well, some of them are like standard squared sums of propagators, some are not. And they are very mysterious, but there is an interesting fact that in certain limiting regions in momentum space, those poles that remain non-spurious are basically, they're approximated by squared sums of momentum vectors. So it somehow, So that is one connection that we've seen to between the moduli space, between amplitudes defined on moduli spaces x3n, xkn, and the usual ones we define on m0n. But there's some sort of interconnection of the singularities.
What is the guess for the physics of this new amplitude? Is there any guess? Is there any attempt? Are these higher dimensional objects being scattered? Is it not an amp?
It's a little bit of a. There should be one. It's a little bit of a mystery still. With this Del Pezzo story, we have some connections in various regions, but yeah, it's largely still a bit of a mystery to make sense of it. Yeah.
Are there things that you tried that was plausible and then it proves not to be the case, at least? Were there attempts of trying to find a physical interpretation that almost worked but failed?
So, well, one of the standards we had was that we should be able to find some theory beyond the bijoint theory, something like NLSM or some other theory. There was some work done there, and what one has to do is, in the CHY theory, what happens is that if you modify the integrand in the CHY formula, you get combinatorial formulas. You get a formula for different theories like NLSM or special Galilean, right? And so, as I understand, a student of Freddie made an ansatz for a generalization of NLSM. That's work in progress still.
But all those examples that you mentioned, if they have usual poles and so on, right? This is different, right?
This is different.
Higher dimensional, this is a different direction of generalization, or am I?
Yes, this when you take and you extend CHY from M0n to the higher dimensional moduli spaces, yeah, it's everything will be new, but what you will see is that in certain directions you recover the things you expect to see. Yeah.
It is generalization of psi hat.
It's not. So in some sense it does on the boundary again. It's not exactly clear what happens in the interior, because the formulas for the analogs of propagators are pretty surprising. I mean, so yeah, for example, one of the first things that happens, which we discovered, was that for a six particle case, bijoint theory generalized to k equals 3, we found one residue of our amplitude that was a product of three usual four-point amplitudes. So that was pretty surprising. That propagator, if you like, it has like a threefold symmetry to match that. But the connection with physics comes from the circumstances on the boundary in these directions, and despite the appearance of the propagators, which I haven't written down yet, in certain extremes they do become the classical things, if you like.
Are you going to talk about the boundaries about that? About interpolating the idea?
No, I can say a few words at the end. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but I mean, yeah. So did that sort of answer? Yeah. Okay. We'll see. Right. Yeah. Okay. So I want to take a step back to geometry. Okay, so, right. Let us consider an arrangement of points in convex position. Each arrangement of points here determines a single point in x3-6. And in particular, if you take a generic configuration, it's a representative of a point in x3-6. So it's represented by a 3x6 matrix, right? So it turns out that up to relabeling, if we allow ourselves to permute the columns, that is, relabel the vertices, the points here, then there are exactly 4 deformation classes of regions. So just like there were 12 pentagons for M05, there are four different kinds of analogs of higher dimensional pentagons here for a total of like 372, just to give a sample. So that's it. And
this basis is polyhedra.
So the curvy polyhedra, yes.
Yes.
So in this case, the information about the moduli space is specified by giving a sign for each of the triangles that comes in here. So notice that if we take the determinant of any three-element subset of columns and say that that's positive, then the arrangement of points should be in convex position if they're all positive. So the goal that I want to say is, for each one of these, there should be some notion of an amplitude. There should be some notion. We should be able to recover issues of some analog of locality from this, and that's the goal here. Okay, so I guess I've already said everything I want to say about that, so I'll continue. So just very quickly, lightning recap of the scattering equations. You have a scattering potential defined on the Riemann sphere, endpoints on the Riemann sphere, take its the vector of derivatives subject to the n linear relations on the kinematic invariants. That implies that this is well defined not only on the Grassmannian, but on the moduli space when you mod out by torus scaling. Okay, our basic ingredient here is this rational function with argument a matrix, a 2x n matrix. And the formula discovered by CHY for the amplitude, for this partial amplitude, is given by the sum over the critical points of the scattering potential of the product of two part Taylor factors divided by this determinant of H. And H is some Hessian determinant. H is the Hessian of the scattering potential. So yeah, bottom line is CHY found a machine that produces from M0n, it produces not only the bijoint theory, but a wide variety of theories as well, which you can get by replacing the Park-Taylor factors with other sorts of functions on the moduli space. Yes?
Could you give me an explanation of this in the GTP model with the S as a small potential?
Sorry, what model?
Model.
I'm not sure. I don't think I. Okay. Sounds it. Maybe. Yeah. So it just. Okay. Well, the picture when you take two different cyclic orders, it corresponds to taking two of those curvy isosahedra that maybe or may not be adjacent, intersect them, and then sum over the vertices there. Okay, so,
yeah.
Okay, so we're trying to so the CHY formula, by modifying the Park-Taylor factors, we have this whole slew of quantum field theories. And we generalized, CEGM generalized this, the formulation of the bijoint scalar. So yeah, the new behavior is novel. But yeah, it recovers in some sense on boundaries some classical behavior. And for other theories and other Lagrangians, not for other theories and their Lagrangians, it is the computational complexity is quite high. So that's the main obstruction here due to the nonlinearity of the problem. Yeah. So tiling moduli spaces. Okay, so I'm going to take the Grassmannian of two-dimensional subspaces of Cn, where all Plucker coordinates are non-zero, all 2x2 minors are non-zero. Okay, and if we take two-dimensional subspaces of Rn, then we can define what's called a chirotope. The chirotope says, pick a point in the Grassmannian and just write down the signs of each of its minors. So we get a vector of plus and minus one if the element is generic. And in our example, our initial example, M05 or X25, remember we had 12 different curvy pentagons. Well, those pentagons can be characterized by 12 possible sign patterns of negative ones and ones. And so this is one particular set of coordinates, U1 to U5, you can write down, and just experimentally, you can see which possible sign patterns have solutions among these five variables, and this is exactly what you get, these 12 guys. So these are called, in combinatorics, these are called chirotopes, or oriented matroids. And so this technology, the reason I'm talking about this now is that the technology of chirotopes or oriented matroids, that's secretly what's going on in M0n. I mean, when we have one isosahedron, that's described by a single chirotope or oriented matroid. And as we move to the other components, these are other oriented matroids. And so we really need that to look systematically at X 3.6 and higher. You need this technology, so. Yeah. Okay, so the, just quickly, the Park-Taylor factor, one reciprocal product of some cycle, a cyclic order, they satisfy some, as we take the set of all Park-Taylor factors, they satisfy some linear identities. You know, U1 decoupling, if you allow the fourth particle to decouple, then 4 is shuffled through the order, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 3, 4, 2, 4 is shuffled through, we get an identity. There are also more interesting identities of this sort. So this is a shuffle of, if you fix 1, this is a shuffle of 2, 3, and 4, 5. So that's another kind of identity. What's that?
There are 5 numbers.
Five numbers, yes.
So that will be defined for any number.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so if we want to make sense, so our effort here, the direction we took was to try and define, the question we asked was, what is the analog of the Park-Taylor factor for moduli spaces X, 3, 6, 3, 7? What is the analog there? And we have to ask, what is the analog of the U1 decoupling identity? You know, so. So what we did was, for each possible configuration of points in the plane, that is each element of X36, we found exactly one rational function on the Grassmannian. One which we call it an integrand, and we found exactly 372 of them, one for each kind of one for each arrangement. Okay, so how do you let me show quickly how you construct them, because it's kind of beautiful. So what you the recipe is. If you write down your point in X36, not as an arrangement of, and not as a collection of points in the plane, but as a collection of lines, I claim we can read off the denominator of our integrand exactly from that. And the way to do that is to look at each triangle and ask which lines bound it. Okay, and that those triangles give you the denominator. So here we go. Instead of pentagons, curvy pentagons, we have 4 different kinds of polytopes with 16, 14, 14, 15 vertices and facets and some number of vertices. And all together, they give a tiling of the configuration space of points in the projective plane. And similarly, in the extension of the CHY formalism, they define amplitudes, which behave well at in certain directions. OK, let me skip that. So just as for the, in the case of the Park-Taylor factor, we have these kinds of identities with the U1 decoupling. Well. For k bigger than 2, obviously the situation is much more complicated. In particular, if we take the, if you think what's going on here, right? We're fixing a cyclic order on 1, 2, 3, and we're allowing 4 to shuffle in between them in all ways. So it's like we take 3 points on a line and allow the fourth to move between these points in all possible ways, right? So if we want to get relations among the partial amplitudes, which we define from these rational functions, these integrands, we're going to have to find some way to fix an arrangement of lines in the projective plane and allow one more line to translate through in all possible ways. And these are the kinds of identities that you'll get there. So each one of these corresponds to one curvy associated. So we the fact is that if you one very novel feature starting at k equals 3 is that if you allow a line just to float through in all possible ways, then you may get a set of regions, a set of curvy isosahedra whose integrands satisfy more than one linear relation, and there is an algorithm to detect which among these are the irreducible identities. So that's just one of the guys there. Maybe I should slow down for 1 second. Is it okay?
So let me just ask. So the U1 identity was the statement that if you reduce U1 to U1, the theory should become free, and therefore the sum of the color braces on the other hand, they become just equal, and so when I add up everything, I should get zero, right?
Yes.
And so here, you are trying to follow the same idea and look for what would be the analog of a U1, free U1 theory.
Yes.
I see. And would you ever guess for what, at least the U1 theory, it's free, but would you know what the theory is in the same way that we know what the theory of one photon? A free photon. Do we know the free theory that we are?
So we know what it looks like on a formal level still. We know the rules. So rather than, can I use chalk here?
Absolutely.
So okay, well, let me see if I can explain in words for now. So what is a color order? We represent that by some cyclic order of points up to reflection. The analog of a color order for a k equals 3 object is what we get is the following. Take an arrangement of lines. Like so, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And we have to come up with some good labeling scheme for this. And what turns out is that if you take any one of the lines, say the first line, and intersect it with each of the others in turn, that gives you a copy of M0 N minus 1. So that is a standard, that has the data of a standard color order. So in fact, what happens is that we get a system of n color orders. So the analog of the color order is a collection of color orders. And if you want to decouple one particle, you take say we want to decouple the element n. 1, 2, 3, 4. So this is what I'm drawing here is 2, 3, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4. So I'm representing the data of this point by a list of cyclic orders, which is like a copy of each line gives us a copy of the projective line, and you intersect each in turn, and we get like a 2, 3, 1 intersects 2, 3, then 4, then 5, if I draw that a little better. Yeah. So if you want to decouple, say, the fifth particle, what we have to do is it decouples from each of the individual color orders, and this last guy kind of floats along. So that's the notion, at least on a formal level. So yeah, you can think of it, the structure which is structure here is like a collection of n color orders where we where a decoupling corresponds to going into each different color order and decoupling the nth particle in there. And that somehow, that gives you this collection of identities, like the 31 guys, yeah.
So are you saying that in the standard case, we derive this identity by replacing the color factor, the color of one of the particles by the U1 generator, right?
Yeah.
And then you put it there, and then you get this identity. But in this case, since you don't have a Lagrangian, then what you're finding is what the identities are, and you're trying to reconstruct your way back.
Yeah.
You're trying to reconstruct your way back to the color ordering, what should the color ordering be, and from there trying to understand what the theory ultimately is going to be. So here is basically playing the game, but in reverse.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's a bit of an arc, exactly. So we're starting from...
And at this point, do you have an explicit realization of the color orderings, or you just know the rules?
Exactly. We know the... by now, we know the rules, and again, there are proposals floating around for the... we have proposals for an actual realization, but it's going to take a bit.
So the generalization was before we had one generator for each particle and therefore one trace. And now instead, you are explaining that these theories, they have, when you scatter n particles, they come with n traces. Is it true? So you follow each particle and you draw the corresponding color order. So you have many color orders for a single process, right?
That's how we represent it, yes.
The analog of one trace, or multiplies one trace, which is what multiplies a given number of generators, now you get n traces right away. Is this true?
So that is the data. So the answer is actually subtle here. It's, that would, I mean, remember, as Freddie said, we have the rules, we have the combinatorial rules that we found, and the question is to work backward to figure...
Taylor is proposing an answer.
Yes, I know.
The product of the traces.
And it could be. And what I'm saying is it's not canonical. It's not, you could have, like, other functions than just the product of all of them. The product of all of them is a good candidate, yes.
But does it do everything?
It does everything except fix there's something which it, the signs. There is a choice of one additional choice of signs. So in the Park-Taylor factor, everything is plus, but it didn't have to be. Right? If we know we have a collection of three isosahedra labeled by three different color orders. No, each of these could come with a plus or a minus. But we know, we have it canonically given as a plus. And that plus, that plus comes for free. Here, that plus does not come for free. So that's another open question. We have to work backward to the sign. Do you guys agree?
Is there a physical quantity that naturally comes with n traces when I study n, I don't want to say particles, I don't want to say a particle, it could be extended objects, it could be something, but when I have n entities, I get n traces. Would one be able to cook up such quantity? Then maybe signs, there are some fermions,
it's
cooking up signs looks easier. Cooking up something that likes to be expressed with n traces looks much
easier. Yeah, no,
looks
I
like
mean...
a very important hint.
Yeah, yeah. It should be something, but yeah, it's.
Or is this misguided?
I don't think we know. I mean, it's. You agree? Yeah. But yeah, we'll see. Stay tuned, right? So how am I doing on?
Well, using the duality you explained at the beginning, even the standard applicants, right? The standard boring bioengineering, they have a dual description.
Ah, yeah,
in terms of these super alien objects.
Yeah, yeah.
And they compute exactly the same quantities. They are unitary. They do everything, because they are exactly dual to each other.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
This is a dual description. And what happens is that there are intermediate theories that are begging to be understood. I mean, understood.
Yeah. So,
intermediate objects. Maybe they are not even theories, who knows. But in any case.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the point, yeah, so exactly. So back to the beginning, we have this duality with this triangle. On the one side, we have our classical theory. On the other side, we are forced to consider these color orders.
In fact, for 5 points, this is the standard boring bioengineering representative.
Yeah, yeah. So
in terms of some
alien completely object. Alien object we have to make sense of.
But it's a completely equivalent to that. It's only when you go to 6 points and you start to see something.
Yeah. So 6 points was the first time we had something in the interior of the triangle. Yeah. So. Yeah. Okay. So. I want to shift gears in the last little bit of the talk to discuss what happens when we refine our moduli spaces by including one additional constraint. That is, that you require that you say that a point configuration is generic if no subset of 6 points is on a conic. So that decomposes, if n equals 6, that's going to decompose our space into more than 372 connected components. And we'll have a bigger symmetry group. So here is, if you want to say, is there a function on the endpoints which detects when those 6 points are on a conic, well, that's is this degree 4 binomial. If that is 0 and your points are generic, then you're on a conic.
I think you have told us what the piece are.
Back at the beginning, yes. So the the p's, if we write a representative of an element in X36 as a 3x6 matrix, then the p's are the minors, the corresponding minors of that matrix. And so you'll notice that each term appears twice. Each index appears twice, so it's homogeneous, and it's well-defined. Okay, so X36 decomposes into 372 connected components, but there's more geometry. We're gonna say with Q equals 0, what happens when this polynomial Q is 0? Well, we get a splitting of X36 into 432 components. And we can see that as follows. All of those, remember we had four arrangements of points. And exactly one of them here is affected by this conic condition. It's the one where the points are strictly convex. So we can always draw through any pentagon, through any 5 points, we can draw a conic. If Q is positive or negative, roughly, that says that determines the location of the 6th point. All right, so so that says that each of the 6 minus 1 factorial over 2 equals 60 permutations of the convex arrangement is split into two pieces. Q positive, Q negative splits it in two. And so 372 increases to 432 each component like has a very big symmetry. And in 2022, well, it turns out that the CGM integrand for this is this guy. It's a pretty simple thing. Q appears in the denominator, only 3 in the bottom. And in a paper with my math collaborators, my math friends, we show that this, in fact, does have poles on each of the faces of that curvy isosahedron, which we called, for some reason, I can't imagine, because it's gotten me into trouble before. People think it's too cute, but we call it a pezzotope. Okay, and in the facets of this pezzotope, there are 10 three-dimensional isosahedra, 5 cubes. So sort of recapping, we have for our moduli spaces, we have tilings of the real moduli spaces. For each connected component, we have some notion of an amplitude or a generalized amplitude. We know we have this notion of duality. It says, look, on the one hand, on the one side, we have this standard amplitude. On the other, we have something that is isomorphic to that standard amplitude, but it looks pretty weird, right? So let's see what happens in this space Y3n to that amplitude. We'll see what happens to that amplitude. So first, here is the combinatorics of the pezzotope. 15 facets, in other words, 15 propagators. The amplitude, which we define as 15 singularities, the analogs of, in the Feynman diagram expansion, if you like, there are exactly 45 of them. So it's a nice combinatorial expansion of that, and that's one of the regions. If you saw, remember at the very beginning, we had these cross ratios, like U1 through U5. Well, the analogs of the cross ratios are these 15 different rational functions. So when you take all admissible sign patterns of these 15 fellows, which ones are realizable by a point, well, you'll find out that there are exactly 432 of them. So I discussed about the derivation. Maybe I don't need to go through that now, but instead, move to an algebraic description of the curvy isosahedron. Okay, so those U variables satisfy this beautiful set of 15 equations. Now, why is it beautiful? Well, it's beautiful in like two ways. If you take that, let's say that the U's are all positive, then from the formula and the equations, they have to be between 0 and 1, just from the formula. Number two, they all appear with exponent 1. That fact is like really super rare, actually. So notice that if you set, say, U1 to 0, then wherever U1 appears in the right-hand side, you know that the corresponding guy that appears once has to be 1, right? So this allows you to like reconstruct the entire curvy polytope, the entire stratification of the polytope. In general, I mean, an equation like this, it looks like a monster, but it has a very simple solution. It has a solution, and that solution is four-dimensional. It's exactly the connected component Y36. So if you remember this guy, well, in our study, In the amplitude study, it is really nice if you can write such a thing as a product of d logs. So d log of some projective invariant. And in fact, yes, it's this. Moreover, if you take any residue of this canonical function, then you should get E one of the canonical functions of one of the faces. And so you can see here this has the structure of a cube, and this has the structure of M06. Right, so those are the two kinds of facets. The two kinds of codimension one strata in the Del Pezzo moduli space, in the tiling of the Del Pezzo moduli space. Okay, and getting near the end. In this sort of, what you can see here, this is, if you plug the integrand from the previous page into the CEGM formula, this is one representation of it. I mean, you get some number, but this is a representation of that number. Oops. And these are the kinds of poles, these are the weird kinds of propagators that you'll get. So I can say, so you see here, maybe like E156, E123, maybe that looks like some linear combination of Mendelstam invariants. But in fact, in order to make sense of what we were seeing, we had to define new things. I mean, so there's a notion of a spinner helicity formalism that is no longer based on 2x2, but now 3x3 matrices. So all of the stuff is following directly from observation. Okay, if you have a polytope, you want to have like an actual description of it. So this says that it is not just a curvy polytope, it's an actual polytope. So what's the difference? I mean, well, this is even a little bit stronger. The result is that the connected component of Y36, any one of those 432 guys, is diffeomorphic as a cell complex, if you like, to the Newton polytope of the product of all of these polynomials. So that's a pretty strong statement. I mean, that says that this, including this co-conic condition, really carves out a nice space. So summary. So connected components of M0n are curvy isosahedra. Okay? We have this notion of a duality. It says, you know that the boundaries are. The right boundary looks pretty weird. But we're forced to make some combinatorial description of it. We have to make sense of it. You have to work backward to the physical interpretation. Connected components of X3n are labeled by what are called chirotopes. With Freddy and Young, recently we extended this formalism back to non-convex regions. So points in X3n, which are represented by point configurations in the projective plane, which are not in convex position. And then there's some generalization of an object in math called the positive tropical Grassmannian. I can talk about that. I think I will not define it now because we're almost done. The Del Pezzo moduli space, it is an actual polytope. And I will stop here. No questions. Thank you. Yeah.
So, like Freddy was saying, so even there are, instead of trying to guess what these exotic new amplitudes are, you both were saying that even the usual amplitude sometimes can be cast into these very strange forms, right?
Yes.
Can you just explain more a little bit? I mean, in the case of, so for example, using 5 points, normally I have 2 color traces for each amplitude, right? If it's by a joint, so I have 2 traces. And in the new formulation, it takes a different form and you don't know how to go from one to the other.
Oh, we know how to go, yes. We know how to we know the dictionary between the two.
But from say an engine point of view,
but do you know it for the color phrases?
Sorry?
For the color phrases?
That's what I meant, yeah.
Oh.
Well, I mean, no, I'm not saying anything profound, just to, okay. Combinatorially. So
oh, yeah. you always have the combinatorial,
yeah.
Which is doesn't mean explicit.
Right. No, I mean no, but
is it just two names for the same space, or is there some difference between the two?
There. Well, okay. Maybe this will be a good. So yeah, right. So maybe. That's right. So
the x2a x1a
x2n xn minus 2 comma n.
Are they the same space?
They're isomorphic, but the So there are a couple things that act weird. One of them is clued in from the spinner helicity. I mean, if you want some analog of the spinner helicity formalism, right, which consists of n 2x2 matrices, which are rank 1, if you like. Yes? Right?
Aren't they just transposing the matrices? Yeah, it's obviously the same space. Just write a matrix, horizontal function.
The two spaces are isomorphic.
They're isomorphic. Yeah, they're
the same. Isomorphic is the same space.
Yes.
But they live to different representations.
They live to different representations.
So why do you get different representations? Because you chop it up in different ways.
No, they're. I guess I don't understand.
Yeah, so the same equations on the same space?
Ah, no. The scattering equations are actually different.
Okay.
Yes.
But okay, so when you make the spaces isomorphic to each other, you relate the scattering equations from one to the other.
So how does it work on the level of the scattering equations?
I just understand.
Yeah.
When you say dual, is that the same thing with different names, or presented in different ways, or decomposed in different ways?
So the amplitude is the amplitude. If you plug momentum, you get the number is the same.
Yes.
But in one way, it's written with objects that look normal, usual propagators, usual color orders, and in the other way, it's a sum of weird stuff.
But is the sum of the same terms written in a different way, or is the different sum of terms?
It's just different.
So like one has three terms, the other has four terms, or stuff like
so
that.
So no. I mean, there's it's a con it's a.
Maybe it would be nice to see.
Yeah.
It should be easy to write down, right?
Yeah.
Three levels, five cubes, 5 points.
Yeah. So n equals 5. Yeah. Exactly. Let me describe 2, 5, and 3, 5.
3, 5. Yes.
So our scattering equations here, well, let me start with the scattering potential, S.
Well, you have to start with the kinematic space first, right?
Yeah.
How are you going to write S without a kinematic space?
I'm going to motivate the kinematic space with the potential.
Oh, okay.
So we write S here as a linear combination, I less than J, log PIJ. Sij. Oh. So this is our 2, 5 scattering potential. So we want here a function on G of 3, 5, consisting of a ijk of right, nothing much yet so far. Kinematic space. In this side, we want it to be defined on the torus quotient, which means that the sum j does not equal I, Sij equals zero for all ij.
Sij is usually the product from many times, like in the I plus bj squared.
Or in the spinner helicity, can you see? Or we can write it as the determinant. Yeah? Are those our rank one matrices? Yeah. Except that that's kind of a clue. So ij does not equal k. Sij So if we want this to be well defined, we have to say whenever we scale the ith column by lambda, we have to pull out that, right? So these are the n relations here. Now I want to come up with some analog of this formula here. Just this determinant formula. So in this case, momentum conservation equals zero.
So that in terms of the individual sums, the sum over Sij has four terms. The sum over the Aj.
If you fix for each k, then you get if n equals five, yeah, you get four choose two. So we want what kind of combinatorial or algebraic object would impose this naturally? We have like three index things. We could say, well, maybe these are products of two minors, ijk, I in bracket, ijk. Maybe we could say that, where this is. They would be 3x3 matrices, and maybe
rank one,
yes. And maybe we could say, well,
so they're not momentum time space time anymore.
No.
So why are you saying the same? Why are you saying that they have the same amplitudes?
They give exactly the same value if you put in the same. There will be a map between every kinematic invariant here and a kinematic invariant there. If you do the math, it would be exactly the same number.
But on one side of momentum, on the other side of no momentum. So.
But that you can assign the same number. And then you get the same numerical answer at the end. So it's two ways of computing the same number.
The same means that.
But the meaning on this side is that's the one point.
The same means that instead s equal to some a, which has the opposite collection of indices.
Exactly. So that would be the duality at the level of the kinematic space. And what he's describing is a way to actually realize it explicitly by introducing more objects that you can assign to each particle.
That would be part. If each s is equal to an a, how comes it one?
No, each s is equal to some s. Oh, that's a curly s.
Sorry.
But so you said the one sum has four terms and the sum has six terms. So if each goes
down. Happens to work out, yes. So this is also an identity that you get for the S's, for the standard S's.
Okay.
That we never learned that you never write in your quantum field theory course.
Okay.
I mean, it's a stupid thing, but it's an equivalent way of writing momentum conservation for five boring particles, but in terms of sums of six things.
And the scattering equations you get by extremizing the two S's are different scattering equations?
No, I mean, once again, the two spaces are the same. So once you gauge fix on one side,
yeah,
you choose the chart for for the space, and on the other, you choose a chart for the other space, the two equations after you identify the kinematic invariance become identical. Yeah, but then there is the interpretation in terms of on one side you have Feynman diagrams, on the other side, mathematicians have, they had already developed objects called arrangements of metric trees, and those turn out to be exactly the correct objects that you need here, and they are arrangements of Feynman diagrams that you can come up with a rule to produce a rational function associated to them. So there is this whole world that mathematicians have been developing in parallel to physicists that somehow could be used or could have been used as the setup for quantum field theory instead of what we usually use. But so it's just something that exists. And,
yeah.
And then on top of that, there are all these intermediate theories that live inside the two ends of the pyramid or the triangle that you show.
Right? We call them theories, but each of them is specific to a number of external things.
No, well, it's like, yeah, exactly. So,
do you know which collections?
So we would say we would like to say that for a given projective space, you get one theory. So you're right. So we shouldn't call it the 6 points on CP2 one theory, but points on CP2. We would like to associate a theory to that.
Just like points.
Just fix the K, and then the other one would be the.
Yeah.
So far it's been gathering. I mean, we have been gathering hints and studying the structure, but an explicit realization is actually.
And it's not happening some of the Google moment now.
So far, these ones are labeled by this generalized momentum, right? These objects that you
yes.
that they were defining there.
Matrices of rank one.
Matrices of rank one. And then Nick hasn't told us yet, but momentum conservation is not that the sum of the matrices of rank one add up to zero. That wouldn't be consistent with the duality. It turns out that the correct description is that the sum of the momenta has to be a rank one matrix itself. So,
and for k equals 3.
Or what you're saying
yes.
in this particular case. Yes. And I have a meeting. Sorry. Give him a hard time. That's
So we will have an amplitude for Sij and an amplitude for curly Si with curly Sij. They are the same thing. One will be written using the usual Sij, the other the new funny ones.
Yes.
And we don't understand the more pedestrian way of going from one to the other without going through these fancy dualities, right? So if I start from a Lagrangian, I change a variable, we're introducing fields and integrating things out. From one representation to the other representation.
No, that's another mystery.
And well, there is no space time, right? Momenta, at least k by k matrices,
yeah.
one. So, this
should be possible.
So, being of rank one is like, it's still a quadratic relation, right? Being of rank one is still a quadratic relation, right? It's just a relation.
Yeah. You mean the determinant of the product, the determinant of the sum?
It's like instead of momentum to satisfy a single notional condition, it's like a big vector satisfies a whole bunch of quadratic equations. That's the momentum.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you have to impose that it be rank one. Yeah, you need every 2x2 minor to.
Yes. We generalize it to things that are not. So, rank one matrices are like a minimal orbit inside the.
What's that?
Rank one matrices like perhaps a minimal orbit inside the ZM. Like
I see.
Modular joint actions to get orbits. I think this is the minimal orbit.
Yeah, okay.
Uh-huh. could we look at minimal orbits of other the others?
Other Dynkin types.
Yes.
Haven't thought.
Matrices, n-type matrices, just elements of some of the minimal orbit of that.
Have not thought about it. There is a. I mean, well, one can start playing around and ask for analogs of 6D spin helicity or something. Yeah, other things like that I haven't tried.
How long are you on for? You're on for another week?
I'll be here till the 27th.
Yeah. Okay, so bye.